Tunde. In a dark basement, in a town in rural Moldova, a 13-year-old girl with a faint moustache on her upper lip brings stale bread and old oily fish to a group of women huddled on dirty mattresses. She has been coming here for weeks. She is young and slow-witted. She is the daughter of the man who drives the bread truck. He keeps lookout sometimes for the men who own this house and the women who are kept here. They pay him a little for the stale bread. The women have tried asking the girl for things in the past. A cell phone. Couldn't she bring them a telephone somehow? Some paper to write a note. Could she post something for them? Just one stamp and a paper? When their families hear what's happened to them, they'll be able to pay her, please. The girl has always looked down and shaken her head fiercely, blinking her moist, stupid eyes. The women think the girl may be deaf, or she has been told to be deaf. Things have happened already to these women to make them wish they could be deaf and blind. The bread truck man's daughter empties their bucket of slops into the drain in the yard, rinses it out with a hose, and returns it to them clean, apart from a few flecks of shit under the rim. The smell will be better in here for an hour or two, at least. The girl turns to leave. When she's gone, they'll be in darkness again.
"Leave us a light," one of the women says. "Don't you have a candle? A little light for us?"
The girl turns towards the door, looks up the stairs to the ground floor. No one is there. She takes the hand of the woman who spoke, turns it palm upward, and in the centre of the palm, this 13-year-old girl makes a little twist with a thing that has just woken in her collarbone. The woman on the mattress, 25, and thought she was going to a good secretarial job in Berlin, gasps and shudders. Her shoulders squirm and her eyes go wide, and the hand that holds the mattress flickers with a momentary silver light. They wait in the dark. They practice. They have to be certain they can do it all in one go, that no one will have time to reach for his gun. They pass the thing from hand to hand in the dark and marvel at it. Some of them have been held captive for so long they never heard a word of this thing. For the others, it wasn't more than a strange rumour, a curiosity. They believe God has sent a miracle to save them, as he rescued the children of Israel from slavery. From the narrow places, they cried out. In the dark, they were sent light. They weep. One of the overseers comes to unshackle the woman who thought she was going as a secretary to Berlin before she was thrown down on a concrete floor and shown over and over again what her job really was. He has the keys in his hand. They fall on him all at once, and he cannot make a sound, and blood gushes from his eyes and ears. They unlock one another's bonds with his bundle of keys. They kill every man in that house. And they're still not satisfied. Moldova is the world capital of human sex trafficking. There are 1,000 little towns here with staging posts in basements and apartments, in condemned buildings. They trade in men too, and in children. The girl children grow day by day until the power comes to their hands and they can teach the grown women. This thing happens again and again and again. The change has happened too fast for the men to learn the new tricks they need. It is a gift. Who is to say it does not come from God? Tunde files a series of reports and interviews from the Moldovan border towns where the fighting has been most acute. The women trust him because of his reports from Riyadh. Not many men could have got this close. He's been lucky, but he's also been smart and determined. He brings his other reports with him. Shows them to whatever woman says she's in charge of this town or that. They want their stories told. "It wasn't just those men who hurt us," a 20-year-old woman, Sonia, tells him. "We killed them, but it wasn't just them. The police knew what was happening and did nothing. The men in the town beat their wives if they tried to bring us more food. The mayor knew what was happening. The landlords knew what was happening. Postmen knew what was happening." She starts to cry. Scrubs at her eyes with the heel of her hand. She shows him the tattoo in the centre of her palm, the eye with the tendrils creeping out from it.
This means we will never stop watching, she says, like God watches over us.
At night, Tunde writes fast and urgently, a diary of sorts, notes from the war. This revolution will need its chronicler. It's going to be him. He has in mind a broad, sweeping book, with interviews, yes, and also assessments of the tide of history, region by region, analysis, nation by nation. Pulling out to see the shockwaves of the power slosh across the planet, zooming in tight to focus on single moments, single stories. Sometimes he writes with such intensity that he forgets that he doesn't have the power himself in his hands and the bones of his neck. It's going to be a big book. 900 pages, 1,000 pages. De Tocqueville's Democracy in America, Gibbon's Decline and Fall. There'll be an accompanying barrage of footage online, Landsman Shoah, reporting from inside the events as well as analysis and argument. He opens his chapter on Moldova with a description of the way the power was passed from hand to hand among the women, then proceeds to the new flowering of online religion and how it shored up support for women taking over towns, and then goes on to the inevitable revolution in the government of the country. Tunde interviews the president 5 days before the government falls. Viktor Moskalev is a small and sweaty man who has held this country together by making a series of alliances and by turning a blind eye to the vast organized crime syndicates that have been using his little unassuming nation as a staging post for their unsavory business. He moves his hands nervously during the interview, brushing the few strands of hair left on his head out of his eyes constantly, and dripping sweat across his bald head, even though the room is quite cool. His wife, Tatiana, an ex-gymnast who once almost competed at the Olympics, sits beside him, holding his hand. President Moskalev, says Tunde, deliberately relaxing his voice, smiling. Between you and me, what do you think is happening to your country? Victor's throat muscles clench. They're sitting in the grand receiving room of his palace in Chisinau. Half the furniture is gilded. Tatiana strokes his knee and smiles. She also is gilded. Bronze highlights in her hair, glitter on the curve of her cheeks.
All countries, says Victor slowly, have had to adapt to the new reality.
Tunde leans back, crossing one leg over the other.
This isn't going out on the radio or on the internet, Victor. It's just for my book. I'd really like your assessment. 43 border towns are now effectively being run by paramilitary gangs, mostly composed of women who freed themselves from sexual slavery. What do you think your chances are of getting control back?
Our forces are already moving to quash these rebels, says Victor. Within a few days, the situation will normalize.
Tunde raises a quizzical eyebrow, half laughs.
Is Victor being serious? The gangs have captured weapons, body armor, and ammunition from the crime syndicates they've destroyed. They're virtually unbeatable.
Sorry, what is it that you're planning to do? Bomb your own country to pieces? They're everywhere.
Victor smiles an enigmatic smile.
If it has to be, that is how it must be. This trouble will pass in just a week or two.
Fucking hell. Maybe he really will bomb the whole country and end up sitting as president of a pile of rubble. Or maybe he just hasn't accepted what's really going on here. It'll make an interesting footnote in the book. With his country crumbling around him, President Moskalev seemed almost blasé.
In the corridor outside, Tunde waits for an embassy car to take him back to his hotel. Safer to travel under the Nigerian flag here than under Moskalev's protection these days. But it can take 2 or 3 hours for the cars to make it through the security. That's where Tatiana Moskalev finds him, waiting on an embroidered chair for someone to call his cell and say that the car's ready. She clicks down the hallway in her spike heels. Her dress is turquoise, skin-tight, ruched, and cut to accentuate those strong gymnast's legs and those elegant gymnast's shoulders. She stands over him.
You don't like my husband, do you?
She says.
I wouldn't say that.
He smiles his easy smile.
I would. Are you going to print something bad about him?
Tunde rests his elbows on the back of the chair, opening his chest.
Tatiana, he says, if we're going to have this conversation, is there anything to drink in this palace?
There's brandy in a cabinet in what looks like a 1980s movie idea of a Wall Street boardroom. High-shine gold plastic fittings and a dark wood table. She pours them each a generous measure, and they look out over the city together. The presidential palace is a high-rise in the centre of town. From the outside, it looks like nothing so much as a mid-price four-star business hotel. Tatiana says,
He came to watch a performance at my school. I was a gymnast, performing in front of the Minister for Finance.
She drinks.
I was 17 and he was 42. But he took me out of that little nothing town.
Tunde says,
The world's changing.
And they exchange a little glance. She smiles.
You are going to be very successful.
She says,
You have the hunger. I've seen it before.
And you? Do you have the hunger?
She looks him up and down and makes a little laugh through her nose. She can't be more than 40 now herself.
Look what I can do,
she says, although he thinks he already knows what she can do. She puts her palm flat to the frame of the window and closes her eyes. The lights in the ceiling fizz and blink out. She looks up, sighs.
Why are they connected to the window frames? Says Tunde.
Crappy wiring, she says, like everything in this place.
Does Victor know you can do it?
She shakes her head.
Hairdresser gave it to me. A joke. A woman like you, she said. You'll never need it. You're taken care of.
And are you? Says Tunde. Taken care of.
She laughs now properly, full-throatedly.
Be careful, she says. Victor would chop your balls off if he heard you talking that way.
Tunde laughs too.
Is it really Victor I have to be afraid of? Any more?
She takes a long, slow swig of her drink.
Do you want to know a secret?
She says.
Always. He says,
Awadi Atif, the new king of Saudi Arabia, is in exile in the north of our country. He's been feeding Victor money and arms. That's why Victor thinks he can crush the rebels.
Are you serious?
She nods.
Can you get me confirmation of that? Emails, faxes, photographs, anything?
She shakes her head.
Go and look for him. You're a clever boy. You'll work it out.
He licks his lips.
Why are you telling me this?
I want you to remember me, she says, when you're very successful. Remember that we talked like this now.
Just talked?
Says Tunde.
Your car is here, she says,
pointing to the long black limousine pulling through the cordon outside the building, 30 floors below them. It's 5 days after that when Victor Moskalev dies, quite suddenly and unexpectedly, of a heart attack in his sleep. It is something of a surprise to the world community when, in the immediate aftermath of his death, the Supreme Court of the country unanimously votes in emergency session to appoint his wife Tatiana as interim leader. In the fullness of time, there would be elections in which Tatiana would stand for office, but the most important thing is to maintain order at this difficult time. But, says Tunde in his report, Tatiana Moskalev may have been easy to underestimate. She was a political operator of skill and intelligence and had evidently used her leverage well. In her first public appearance, She wore a small gold brooch in the shape of an eye. Some said this was a nod to the growing popularity of goddess movements online. Some pointed out how very difficult it is to tell the difference between a skillful attack using the electrical power and an ordinary heart attack. But these rumours were without any evidential foundation. Transfers of power, of course, are rarely smooth. This one is complicated by a military coup spearheaded by Victor's chief of defence, who takes more than half the army with him and manages to oust the Moskalev interim government from Chisinau. But the armies of women, freed from chains in those border towns, are broadly and instinctively with Tatiana Moskalev. Upwards of 300,000 women pass through the country every year, sold for the use of their moist bodies and fragile flesh. A great number of those have stayed, having nowhere else to go. On the 13th day of the 5th month of the 3rd year after the Day of the Girls, Tatiana Moskalev brings her wealth and her connections, a little less than half her army and many of her weapons, to a castle in the hills on the borders of Moldova. And there, she declares a new kingdom, uniting the coastal lands between the old forests and the great inlets, and thus, in effect, declaring war on 4 separate countries, including the Big Bear herself. She calls the new country Bessapara, after the ancient people who lived there and interpreted the sacred sayings of the priestesses on the mountaintops. The international community waits for the outcome. The consensus is that the state of Bessapara cannot hold for long. Tunde records it all in careful notes and documentations. He adds, "There is a scent of something in the air. A smell like rainfall after a long drought. First one person, then 5, then 500, then villages, then cities, then states. Bod to bod and leaf to leaf. Something new is happening. The scale of the thing has increased."